The Get Rich Slow Club podcast is a collaboration between Tash Etchman from Tash Invest and Anna Christina from Perla. The Get Rich Slow Club acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land we record on. From coast to coast, across land, waters, and communities, we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Any advice is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives, so consider whether it's appropriate for you.
Welcome to the Get Rich Slow Club podcast,
where we take you from beginner to confident investor,
where we can teach you everything you need to know about investing.
So come get rich slow with us. We've got Zarmeen Pavri on the show, who's a fund manager that focuses on impact investing. She wears many hats, one that includes running her own impact and sustainable investing advisory consultancy. We chat about impact and sustainable investing, venture capital, and how companies are getting a 30% higher return and what traits they possess to do so.
We do talk about venture capital investing in this episode, but just a reminder that this is a really risky type of investing and you should never invest more than you're willing to lose.
So as always, we're going to start off with our money wins and losses of the week. Zarmeen, would you like to kick it off?
Sure. Well, this week we have been exploring solar and everything to reduce our energy footprint. So we had the electrician in today to give us quotes on changing all the halogen lights, and we've just moved into this new place. So looking forward to saving on those energy bills.
Amazing. Do you know how much you might save?
No, I don't know how much we'll save on the lights itself, but I do know with the solar, we'll be able to reduce, I think, around 80 to 85% of our energy bill, what's on current consumption. But obviously, going forward with the, you know, climate change, our consumption may increase, but at least a good 70 to 80%, that's what we've been projected to and told.
Yeah, amazing. Very on brand as well for today's chat.
Yeah, it is. It's actually interesting. I had someone on one of our podcasts mentioned how we have solar and how we're also looking at our energy consumption. But I said that we run our dishwasher at night when the peak is off peak. And someone said, well, why don't you do it in the daytime when you have solar energy? And I was just like, it just doesn't work for my lifestyle to run the dishwasher in the middle of the day. So I love that comment, but it's absolutely on brand for today's conversation and energy consumption and trying to navigate your lifestyle, but also trying to be as environmental or aware of your consumption as possible. Tash, what's your winner loss today?
I was just randomly on Instagram last night and I saw that Lifeline in Canberra is having a book fair today. So it's not a win yet, but I'm going to go buy some books after this, which I'm very excited about.
Nice.
That's really great.
Yeah, I didn't realize they did those, but it's a fun way to raise some money.
Awesome. My money win is, it's less of a money win, but more of a networking win that hopefully is a future win. I think we talk a lot about money on the podcast, but then there's things that aren't directly monetarily connected. In the past couple of weeks, I reached out to a couple of people in the finance space, just said, hey, I think you're doing great work. Do you have 15 minutes to chat? And out of those conversations, I've just made these amazing connections who kind of also propelled me to be on a different podcast for my book and stuff. You never know what networking can do for you. And I'm a big advocate of thinking about your career and networking. And even though it's not a actual financial win in that sense, it's a win for, I guess, potential future self, I think. So I'm going to put that as a net positive in my weekly win or loss of this week. So
how exciting.
So let's kick it off. Zarmeen, you have an extensive history of working in fund management, impact, and sustainable investing. Can you explain exactly what impact and sustainable investing is?
Yeah, look, this is a really big, I definitely can showcase what impact investing is in the differentiator, but sustainable investing is quite a big, broad umbrella, and impact investing is, you know, a component of it. So if you think about this big umbrella, and it's all the gradients of types of investing. So if you go from the far, say, left-hand side of a spectrum, you've got just investing that doesn't take into consideration anything to do with environment, social, or other non-financial elements. It's just pure profit at any cost. And then you move down the spectrum towards the right-hand side, perhaps, and you start to have an investment approach, which is a sustainable approach. It could be ethical investing, which is taking out, you know, considerations of values that you might have. You don't want to invest in companies that are doing poor for the environment or people, like tobacco or alcohol. Then you move a bit more towards another side of the spectrum of sustainability, and you know, an investment manager or your investment approach maybe to consider investing in positive things that, you know, produce good things for people or planet. And then you go to the more the extreme investment approach, which is, you know what, I want to make a difference with my capital or with my investment. I will look at all of the environmental and social factors that are impacting this investment opportunity, but I'm also going to see if I can create impact returns. So non-financial returns that are really measured and monitored, and just like financial returns are monitored and measured, we are aiming for a dual return, which is financial return and impact return. And that's what impact investing is. So impact investing is an investment approach. Sustainable investing is sort of like a big umbrella, and it's got different approaches towards it. But if you think about the ABC, A is to avoid harm, B is to benefit planet, and C is to contribute to solutions that have impact. So that ABC is an investment approach that fund managers apply with sustainable investing or, you know, impact investing.
Do you have some examples of what impact returns might look like?
Yeah. So we've got a company that we've invested in. It's one of my favorites. So I invest in climate tech solutions. So one company is, I'm just focused on climate and climate tech. So this company is an Australian-based company, and it's focused on giving energy access to people that don't have any energy access. So we're talking about people across the globe that I think, I can't remember the big numbers, but at least in Nigeria, that I think there's something like 90 million people without any energy at all, no electricity. So they've got a battery tech play, a solar play, and Internet of Things, IoT thing, hardware and software solution, and they're selling it. Now, we've picked that company because of its economics, its financial benefits, etc. It's got a good ethos and a purpose, but I'm also now measuring the impact. And so the impact is, well, they gave energy access, and they've got access to the people that have in villages, you know, electricity. They've broken the Nigerian market. They are going into Cambodia as well. And so the impact return is they've got health impacts for the women who are, you know, cooking in with wood or bad diesel, etc. So there's health outcomes that they're measuring. There's gender outcomes because women have got more time to do other things other than collecting the wood and coming back. We've got educational outcomes, impact outcomes, because the children, you think about your own education, you had the benefit of having electricity and studying at nighttime. Children have been going out to the street lights and street lamps to actually learn. So you've got the education outcomes because electricity's in there, health outcomes, as I said, and economic outcomes for the country. So where the investee company that we've invested in is actually measuring a couple of those metrics on gender, health, education, economic empowerment. So that's how we're measuring, and we're saying this is the baseline, this is how many households they impacted, this is they're growing to scale, and we've got a framework, etc., to go through and measure in a consistent consistent manner. So that's an example. And financial returns, like we're in venture capital, so it will automatically, the financial returns will come with that sort of impact, proxy coming through.
That's what I was going to ask, is that like having impact is so great to share, you know, like we're making a difference in the world. But then there's also that flip side of people wondering, will they have a financial return on it? Do you think that they're mutually exclusive? Can they work together? How do you think about that, I think, in your space?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're so focused on having one lens, and impact investing is about creating dual returns. Yes, there is a whole spectrum of returns. I mean, you know, you'll have your own investments in your superannuation. Some will be poor performing, some are average, some are, so that's the same with impact. You'll have different impact opportunities that create different return economics, if you like, from a financial sense, but they can absolutely coexist, and they're a great companies. And so, you know, as I said, I'm in venture capital, so I'm not taking reduced returns. I am actually using the impact multiplier, those sorts of metrics, to actually predict future catalytic returns. So I might get a unicorn, financial unicorn, but I'm hoping I'll get an impact unicorn first because the financial return will absolutely hit the mark. So I think using both lenses, it's only profit first for all costs is causing such a lot of detrimental damage. That is not how we need to invest. We really need to have a much more holistic view. So I'm for both.
Yeah, definitely. How can people move past that all or nothing thinking with like ethical or sustainable investing? I have a lot of people tell me that like, oh, I can't buy an ethical ETF because it invests in this one company, so there's no point. I might as well just not bother completely with that.
Yeah, so I think if we go back to that, I think you need to start somewhere. So everybody's values are different. So from the ethical side, it's quite hard. So there's three of us on this call right now. We will each have different levels of tolerance for different things. So I might be, I might have had someone in my family that died of cancer and, tobacco is a really big thing for me. Whereas for you, it may not be a big enough issue to exclude certain stocks, in this ETF that is causing harm and health. But if you go back to the fundamentals, yes, ETFs have got, some exclusions, but I challenge those people to say, well, can you avoid creating more harm? So it may not hit, if you've got 10 values that you really don't want to invest in, then, and the ETFs captured 8 of them or 5 of them, 5 less harm, avoiding harm to the people or planet is better than none. Right. So I think that's a very apathetic sort of, lazy way to invest if you're not thinking about all of those factors.
I wanted to just take a step back. You talked about venture capital and investing in that space, and we haven't talked about that on the podcast at all before. That's a whole new space of investing that our audience has never heard of. Can you just talk a little bit about what that is and what that looks like?
Yeah, sure. Look, it is a type of investment. Like if your traditional investments is in, it's the stock market or term deposits or bonds or property, typical investment classes, venture capital is an asset class, and it's a more riskier asset class because we're investing and giving finance to startups and entrepreneurs and creating finance, providing capital for those companies in the private markets to grow. So before you get to the listed, companies, they all start off with as being a private company. So we're fostering innovation, entrepreneurship, different types of startups at different stages of business. So it's in the private markets as opposed to the public markets. As I said, it's much more riskier asset class. It wouldn't be an asset class that I would start investing in first. And it's also typically funded by venture capital or angel investors who actually are sophisticated investors that have, I think the definition today is around you need to have net assets of $2.5 million and have an income of around $250,000 a year to be able to invest. And also to get into some of these investment deals, you're talking at big chunks of money like $20,000, $10,000, $50,000 to get in or more. So, yeah, it's a type of investing in private markets, a riskier asset class, and you wouldn't want to do that. I personally would not recommend any of your views if you have not done any investing before to start as an angel investor. It's like if you haven't had any investment experience, I would not want you to be gambling away a lot of money that way. So start with the public markets and do other things first to get your head around it, unless you are inside a certain industry and you really know that company really well and you really have faith in it, then go for gold if you want.
Is there a way to invest without having 50 or 20 grand for it?
Yeah, look, there's angel networks, angel investing networks, and they can group small amounts of money, maybe even $5,000, $10,000. But I still believe, I'm not in the angel syndicate to be sure, but I still believe that you need to sign off that wholesale certificate or sophisticated certificate to be able to qualify. But not in my space, but I believe that there are avenues that you can.
Yeah, there are. I have a few friends who invest that way. So smaller amounts of money get pooled together to go towards startups as funding. But like you said, it is quite risky, but it is interesting because we hear so much about it. There's tons of, you know, angel investors and unicorn companies and everyone wants to get in on that. But like you said, it can be risky because just because you have one company that was really successful doesn't mean that what you're investing in is. So but it is a different avenue for people to consider. Going back to some of the impact and sustainable investing, before we jumped on the call, we did kind of talk about Amazon, which is a question we ask a lot of guests that we have on the show. Do you think Amazon is ethical? How do you view a company of that type?
Yeah, look, great question. And as I sort of alluded to, everybody, as I said, coming back from that ethical lens, your level of ethics and mine will be different. So what I'm looking at is, okay, does a company like Amazon have any controversy? And actually, for all investors, you can actually literally Google the company name and controversy risk, and you'll come up with different things on the ethical side, or the E or the S or the G, environmental, social, or governance issues that are coming up. So is the company, first of all, from a governance perspective, you really need to see, have they got good governance? And that means, are they treating their employees fairly? Is there supply chain labor exploitation, which Amazon does have? There are two legal claims for Amazon for chronic pay inequity, gender discrimination. There's environmental impacts that they're looking at. There's data privacy breaches that they're focusing on. There's issues with staff. That's just on the top of my head. And so I don't want to judge on Amazon from, you know, every person will judge on its own. But then is it ethical? I don't believe so. Has it got financial returns at all costs? We were talking about that. Do you want to get the returns at all costs? Perhaps you may want to. And that's an investment decision that you all need to definitely make. But what those controversies are showing is that, do you believe as an individual investor or an individual person that these sorts of issues are going to create problems in the future for your valuation of that company? Would there be future legal risks? Would there be actual sustainability risks? So when you look at all of those factors, they're actually risk factors for long-term sustainability of a company when you're assessing things. So, you know, taking into account all of those considerations, those ethical considerations, you'd need to make an informed decision as to, you know, your bar of, do you really want to go after those financial returns at all costs, knowing that these things are existing, or do you make an informed decision from a risk perspective, long-term sustainability perspective, and making an investment call, really, that this is not the company that I want to invest in because I don't believe it's long-term sustainable. They may have cost issues. The valuation may be going down. I may lose money on that company when I go in. And so they are key factors that you should really consider overall and, you know, make a informed investment decision using those other elements of a risk lens, if you like.
Mm-hmm. So Amazon probably isn't ethical, and getting into startups and VC is really expensive. So how can the everyday person try and be sustainable and impactful in their everyday investing?
Yeah, look, first, I always start with every person in the workforce has some form of superannuation in this country. And the first thing to start their journey is to really look at their superannuation default. What are your default options? And just have a look at what you're investing in, even just in superannuation. That's just a stepping stone to at least see how your superannuation fund is investing. And if you are ethically inclined, or if you are focused on climate or sustainability, a lot of the super funds actually have sustainable options, and you may want to just switch, and that could just allow you to see the different stocks and different opportunities there. That would be the most simplest way. The other way is just to really start, you know, if you are wanting to dabble in the stock market, there's so many, you know, tech platforms that allow StockSpot, and, you know, my daughters are on, you know, online with, you know, investing, and just to start thinking about just investing in one stock and just see what happens. You know, Google, as I said, always Google controversy risk, and at least get an understanding of that. But, you know, start small, and perhaps looking at getting a financial advisor if you need help, but there's a lot of fintech companies, you know, that are giving you a lot of educational needs. You don't even need a financial advisor to just start small, and probably in the more ETF space, as you know, you mentioned, Tash, before, people are starting to explore that. There are lots more ETFs coming out and having a go. But I think financial literacy is a really big thing. Would not start entering something with an immature level of knowledge. I think that's not prudent investing. That's not something that I would promote. Just start something. Would want you to actually get exposed to some education around what are you looking out for, how to look at different things. Otherwise, you're going to get hurt, and that's not what we want. We want to preserve capital, especially for women as well.
Mm. Those are great tips. Looking at your super, starting with one, and financial literacy. You've mentioned diversity dividend. What is that?
That's one of my passion, I suppose, work ethic and everything else I do is around diversity. The diversity dividend is about how can companies, and I'll talk about companies because we're talking about investing, how can companies actually create a diversity dividend by realizing the gender and racial equity biases that they have. And it's about creating value creation between the company, the employee, and attracting new applicants and creating great, promoting sustainable products. It's everything involved in that. And it's based on the fact that there's research that shows that companies that have more diverse senior management, more diverse teams have about 30% higher profit margins on average.
So that's huge.
That's a great stat. That needs to be shared more.
Yes. So I think the stat is companies with more diverse, I'm just reading it out now because that is my go-to stat. Companies with more diverse senior management teams have about 30% higher profit margins on average in the following 12 months than companies with lower gender diversity in any given year. It also finds that more diverse senior management teams can generate cumulative return on equity almost 30% higher than lower diversity teams. That is a fundamental investment insight that I use when I'm picking my own stocks on the listed stock market. I'm looking, financial statements are publicly, you know, available. They may not share that information, but it's certainly something that you can ask as a shareholder. But that is a good, that's why that diversity dividend is coming out, you know, that just with that research and stat.
Yeah, amazing.
The impact of your senior management and how that trickles down. I've read a lot of stats on that because a lot of times people or companies focus on their lower, not lower management, but the employees that they hold where they don't focus on diversity at that upper levels. And really, you kind of need it from both ends in order to see any meaningful impact across the company.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of super funds will be actually looking at the diversity on boards. That's definitely a thing. This is at the next level down. There's a lot of research happening at that senior management level. As you said, Anna, you know, there's a big dropout in retention of females going up through the chain in the middle and senior management.
I'd love to know why that's the case, if you do know.
Such a combination of things, and that would be a topic for another
Day.
Day, and there's lots of good work going on, retention strategies and structural features in our systems that need to be changed.
But, yeah,
another time.
Yeah, there's another term that we've chatted about: diversity alpha. What is that when it comes to investing?
So it's along the similar lines. So alpha, just for your viewers and listeners, is in a finance term that is a measure of performance that is saying it's an excess return of an investment relative to a benchmark that you may have or your peers. So it's, you know, extra returns. And so the diversity alpha, and that's sort of my coined personal, you know, investment philosophy in term, is that, as I said, going back to those companies, if you've got more diverse teams, so even when I'm investing in startups as a venture capital, or even when I'm looking at my own portfolio of, companies in my super fund, I'm looking for diversity in my team, in those companies. I'm looking because I know that those companies that are going to be, that I'm going to be investing in, will have a 30% more return generation. So that alpha is, if I pick lots of companies with diverse management teams, I am guaranteeing that I will beat any fund manager just using that lens alone. So it's just an outperformance measure when I'm looking at things. It's a factor that I look at, and it's an important one. And I guess another stat is, you know, that there's more research that says that, you know, gender inclusive teams in investment world as well is likely to create a 21% more outperformance on a fund. So if you're looking for fund managers as well, it's important to look at the diversity of the investment team that you're investing in, because that also trickles down to the investment team. Venture capitals as well. You know, if there's more female partners, you know, there's a likely spike, I think, in 10% more profitable exits. So it's all quite linked, that diversity of thought, gender, etc. So it all links up from investment level, fund manager level, company level, and impact for everybody in society in a positive way.
I was reading somewhere that I think it was only 2% of VC funding goes to female founders. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is correct. I think there's a new report that just came out for 2023, and I think the percentage has gone up by to 4%. But if you uncouple that and disaggregate it to women of color and Indigenous women, or and any intersection of that, it's much more smaller. So we've got a very big way to go. And again, the funding is a big issue. We need to look at the firms that are investing into the companies, you know, how many female partners are in these VC firms to allocate the money. It just is a you know, a waterfall effect. So we can keep complaining about there's no funding going to female founders, but let's look at the investors who are investing. They're all typically male. So we've got to change that, right? We really, really need to look at the root cause of different things. And then we go up to the investors in the venture capital firms, the super funds and other bigger investors. What are they looking at, right? So it just has to go right up to the value chain, and everybody needs to understand what's happening.
So for an average investor who's maybe new and is excited about, you know, impact investing and so forth, but overwhelmed maybe by this episode, because like, where do you start? I don't have a lot of money. How do I get involved? Are there any small tips? I know you said looking at your super, but is there anything else that someone can look into? Because yes, they can do all this research, who's on the board, who's in senior management, but then how do you invest in those can be quite challenging and also overwhelming. Do you have some quick tips for someone who's interested in this, how they can proceed?
Yeah, look, I'm a big believer in pooling and diversifying your risk. So when you go into one company, you just got one company. So I would start, I know I'm a fund manager and I have been in the space for a long time, but if you invest in a fund manager, they're giving you a pool of stocks that they've already selected, right? So that means you're diversifying already your risk. You're not putting all your eggs in one basket in one stock or whatever it is. So you're outsourcing that for the time being. You can look at, so it's just a case of whether you want active ownership, but you really need to have that financial literacy, as you said. So for the average investor, yes, maybe the thing is to go to an ETF or to a fund manager. Yes, you have to pay fees, but that's because we are experts. We have got
nothing
the financial, we've got the financial literacy, right? You're talking about, can anyone become a teacher? Can anyone become an electrician? Can anyone become anything without some education? So you are de-risking your investment dollar by giving it to an investment professional. That's number one. Number two, if you want to look at four fund managers, at least you can go on to, and I'm in the sustainability space, so I'm not going to, that's my tilt. So I will give you the tip for people that are wanting to have sustainable returns. Go to the Responsible Investment Australia Association, RIA, RIAA. They've got a list of responsible investment leaders and firms that actually have products that are in the sustainable space, doing well. And at least you can have a funnel, if you like, of curated, good, excellent performing, good to excellent performing fund managers and super funds and everything else. And that could be a good starting point. If you have a financial advisor, you absolutely have to ask the right questions. There are lots of ethical products. There are lots of ETFs. There are lots of ESG products. But the financial advisor, if they don't know, then you've got to really push them. You are, you know, giving your power to another advisor. They should be able to showcase a lot of other options for you as well. Yeah, that would be my, you know, quick tips. I'm not in the retail space, so I'm very afraid to give you any other advice going publicly because I don't have that license to give any other investment advice on that front.
I think you mentioned StockSpot earlier. They have an ethical option. You've got Raise, it's got an ethical one too. Pella Micro has an ethical option. So even just starting there and seeing what all those ETFs are.
Yeah, look, there's lots. There's climate ones, there's the beta shares ones, there's, you know, I'm not promoting anyone, but there are tons now. There are really a lot. It's just a case of, you know, your own ethical screening versions that you'd like.
Yeah, we did an episode a few episodes back with Perla all about their most popular ethical ETFs. So that's a good one to go and have a listen to.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. If anyone wants to get any more information, where can they go?
Oh, look, they can hit me up on LinkedIn. There's not too many Zameen Pavris around and very happy to, I wear quite a few number of hats. So to share my email addresses, I've got about four, so that's not going to work. But hit me up on LinkedIn, Zameen Pavri, and you'll find me, and I'm very happy to share my expertise or guide anyone on your call.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. This was great.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. If you found this episode helpful, please rate us 5 stars, write a review, or share with a friend. If you're new to investing, make sure to listen to our first 10 episodes. Follow us at Get Rich Slow Club or Tash at Tash Invest or me at Anna Christina.
This show was brought to you by Natasha Etchman, who is an authorized representative, 1299881 of Guideway Financial Services, AFSL 420367. And Perla, who is an authorized representative, 1281540 of Sanlam Private Wealth, AFSL 337927. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to investing. So make sure you check out our financial services guides and read the product disclosure statement and target market determination for any investments you're considering. See our show notes for more info.